You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 and welcome to today's show, Your Ultimate Life. This show and everything else I do is dedicated to helping you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy by serving with your gifts. Today, I have a special guest, a lot of fun, David McLeod, who I've known for a number of years. David, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Kellen. I'm delighted to be here.
So, you know, I mean, we've been on each other's shows before, and you know the work that I do, and my listeners and viewers know the work that I do. I always like to ask people, what is your definition of the ultimate life, since that's the name of the show?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Before I started doing my own personal deep growth work, I used to think that the ultimate life was all about success, all about having the house, the money, the job, the family, all of the possessions and everything like that. And I have come to learn that really the best kind of life has nothing to do with any of those things at all. And for me personally, I've come to realize that, in fact, I really don't care about possessions. I care more about having a spiritual connection to the truth of who I really am, and a deeper understanding of my relationship with everybody else, not only on the planet, but elsewhere in the universe. You and I have talked about this many times, and I know that you've had your own personal experiences of, I know about your near-death experience, for example. I'm sure you've shared that with your listeners. And I believe that I've had what I call a near-life experience. And it's an experience in which I think once I was able to release all of my connection to the physical world through a deep process with a men's group called the Mankind Project and a new warrior training adventure, I connected to some aspect of myself that I hadn't really been connected to for 50 years. And it was an amazing, amazing connection. So everything I do now is about trying to deepen my connection with that understanding, that knowing of who I really am and why I'm here, and also helping other people to experience that on some level for themselves. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is the ultimate life is an understanding of who we really are, a deep connection with that, with that knowledge, and therefore doing, exemplifying it. And then also you mentioned being of service and helping other people establish their version or their connection to that same essence. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well. And, you know, I think one of the things that I have learned over the years is there really is nothing more important than knowing who we really are. And part of the challenge that I think we have in this world is that We have been taught or conditioned, I think, to believe that we have to look to others to find out who we really are. And that, unfortunately, is a pretty well ingrained habit pattern that most of us have, at least until we've done some work on ourselves. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to ask. We've both used the phrase "who we really are" several times, and depending on the viewpoint and the thoughts and other work or not work that people who are listening have done, let's dive into that. What does that mean? Who you really are? There's no right or wrong, but I want you to say what that is, and I will too. But I don't want to leave that hanging as kind of a thing, like everybody's sort of supposed to know what that means.
Right. Yeah, that's a great question, and I think a very important one. And part of how I learned the answer for myself was by asking the very question, who are you? Who am I? And one place that I learned this was in a workshop in which I was paired up with another person, and we asked each other that question, and I, as the asker, would say, who are you? And the other person would respond with whatever felt true in that moment. And often the answers are, you know, as you would expect, if I say, who are you? And it just comes out of the blue, you're probably going to say, well, I'm Kellen. But if I say, thank you so much for that, who are you? Now you might go a little deeper and you say, well, I'm a man. And then I say, thank you. And we go a little deeper and deeper and deeper. And before you know it, you're finding things about yourself. You know, I'm a talk show host. I'm an author. I'm someone who's had a near-death experience. These are all things that you associate with who you are, even though they're merely experiences of life, right? They're not actually who you are. And this is where it becomes really, really interesting for people. The deeper and deeper and deeper you go, the more you realize, wow, yeah, I'm not really David. And a man is just some expression of my personal existence right now. So my answer today, knowing what I know and having gone through that process many times, my answer for me, and I believe for everyone else, is that I'm a divine, magnificent, unlimited spiritual being of light and love who happens to be having a temporary human experience along with everybody else. That's how I describe myself now.
Good. I love it. Because at the essence, I was reading this book, one of Michael Singer's, I think his latest one called Living Untethered, and he talks about the location, and he gives the location somewhere between the spine and the heart, the essence of something or other. And I'm not going to talk about whether he's right or wrong or who cares. But the thing is, we all know that the things that happen around us, whether it's, you know, an illness or we win the lottery or we have some terrible, somebody dies or whatever it is, those experiences influence us. But at the end of the day, or the beginning and the middle, we're just that being somewhere in there who's watching or seeing or participating in those experiences in a fun, well, fun and a little morbid way to describe it is someone says, well, you know, if I lose a limb, someone who's lost a leg, well, that doesn't change who they are, or both legs, or, you know, more, and I don't know at what point you cease to function, but the us is not in the body parts. There is some essence in there that is the observer and participator of all these things that we superficially identify with all the way through life unless we learn otherwise, right?
Yeah, I agree with that totally. I mean, you mentioned I'm not this little pinky finger. If I lose that, that doesn't change who I am. I'm not this hand. If that hand goes away, that doesn't change who I am. You could start stripping away your entire body, and eventually the body is entirely gone, and none of that changes who you are. That's the thing that most people don't really understand. We, as I said, we have been so conditioned in our upbringing and in our societies and so forth to believe that we are, like, I am my body, as an example. But that's not true. I'm not really my body. The real consciousness that happens to maybe inhabit this body temporarily, that consciousness exists forever and everywhere. And it's hard for people to understand that, especially when they're coming from a place of the ego mind that puts natural resistance and filters and all kinds of perspectives on things and limits the way we see stuff.
So let's dig into that a little bit more. Why? Yeah. So I'm agreeing with everything you said. We're some other essence. We'll call it a spirit, for lack of a better word. And maybe that is the best word. I don't know. So we're some kind of a spiritual, infinite, loving, capable thing inside this body. Why does it matter that we, and you said our conditioning, our upbringing, how the world works, you know, the reward system, all kinds of things are set up to camouflage, obscure, or devalue that truth. Why does it matter that we know that, and that beyond knowing it, that we change how we live because we know it?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I will answer by saying it doesn't matter. Each of us has a choice, and when we look at our own individual lives, if we are willing to raise our consciousness high enough and to understand that maybe what we have been believing isn't necessarily true, then we can open ourselves up to greater possibilities. However, nobody is required to do that. It, you know, maybe I don't know, somebody listening to this show has a sole purpose of, I don't know, just living this life by default without learning anything. Maybe that's their purpose. So I'm not here to judge anybody or to say you're wrong because you don't happen to do the work necessary to raise your level of consciousness. I'm just saying that if you truly want to have an ultimate life, if you believe that there's something greater for you, then one of the ways you can do that, and I think probably one of the most powerful ways, is to find a way to transcend your ego mind and live beyond the limitations that you've imposed upon yourself through the conditioning that happened throughout your life. That's all I'm saying.
What if, what happens to me, because I lived in that for a long time, in the climbing the sort of corporate ladder, making a lot of money and doing all that sort of stuff. And I agree with you. Nobody's required to. Nobody's keeping score. Nobody's going to run around and make you do anything. You're free to live however you. So what are the limitations on me, for example, or somebody like me, who lived chasing money, power, and position for a long time? What happens in those situations that is different or limiting in some way than when I choose to understand that I'm not my body and I'm not these things that I used to think I was?
Well, I can't speak for you, Kellen. So I don't know exactly what happened for you. But I have seen, I have just in the last few years, I think I've known you now for about 11 or 12 years. I don't remember exactly when we met, but it seems to me that's about the right time frame. Mm-hmm. And just in that short time, I didn't know you before when you were doing all this corporate ladder climbing and stuff. So I didn't get to see that particular version of Kellen Flukiger. But I've seen how you have shifted and grown and changed just in the last 12 years. And I think part of that has to do with your own realization. This is my judgment now, my story. I'm making this up. I don't know if it's true or not. But I believe that what I observe in you is that you decided, probably because of your near-death experience, that it was time to raise your own level of consciousness. You decided that it was more important for you to start bringing your wisdom and your understanding to this world than it was to make lots of money. And, you know, let's face it, you know how to make lots of money. You can do that. And that's great. And there's nothing wrong with making lots of money if that's what you choose to do. But I think what you found for yourself is there's something way more important than making lots of money. And I've had a similar experience, but not from the same perspective. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that a lot of people are going to be thinking, well, how do I get what you've got? Well, I can't give you an answer to how you get what I've got or how you get what Kellen has got. What I can tell you is, really, what's important is what you, viewer and listener, what you've got. And only you can raise your awareness around that. Nobody else can do that for you. We might be able to point you in the right direction, give you some tools, some suggestions, whatever. But ultimately, it's you who has to decide for yourself what's important and what you really want to do with your life.
So you and I both meet a lot of people who say stuff like, I want to help people. I want to do good in the world. I want to do more. And they use sort of language that isn't really very precise because the feelings are sort of expansive and they're not precise. So no, you can't give anyone yourself, or neither can I. But when someone comes and says, you know, I really am not satisfied with the impact I'm having or my level of understanding or awareness or happiness or, you know, whatever language they choose. And you know, you or I, we're going to send them on a mission to start working on it. And they have to do all the work themselves, just like you and I did. What do you start with? How do you help people who are expressing this desire? And I'm not even talking about people that are skeptical or negative. I'm saying someone that comes and says, you know, I have done this other stuff, whatever it is, whatever their version of stuff was, and they're ready for some of that life mastery that's on the picture behind you. What do you start with?
Well, I think the answer to that question is I like to go in and find out, well, why are you asking these questions in the first place? When you say you want to help people, what does that really mean? You know, we have to be clear that some people don't want help. We have to be clear that some people would prefer to do it on their own. And so helping people is kind of a misleading and, as you say, a non-specific way of describing a personal desire. I think what people are really saying is, I want to make a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. I want to have a positive influence on the world. Well, my answer to that is, then do your own work. Because what happens is, people will believe you and accept you for who you are if you are showing up authentically with full transparency and without any kind of artifice that you put on top of yourself. If you can unload your own masks and your own costumes that you wear in order to present yourself to society and just show up as who you really are, people are going to resonate with that. Not everybody. Some people are going to just say, man, that guy's a dick. I don't really want to have anything to do with him. And that's okay. You know, they have their stuff. Remember, all I can do is do my own work. And hopefully, if people decide to work with me, help them to do their work. That's it. That's really all there is. I can't tell people what to do, how to find their purpose or anything, although I have some suggestions that can work for them.
So let's talk about this doing the work. You know, Byron Katie has a book, Loving What Is, and she has that process called The Work. And that doing your own work, like we're using lots of the jargon that's in the coaching and self-help world, which is okay because that's where we live. If a person's coming and they're sort of thinking, I want to get started on this because I see people who seem to be happier, seem to be having a positive impact. They seem to be doing that, and I know they can't give that to me, but I want to do something so that I can get started on that road of doing my own work. Tell me some things that you start with or suggestions that you make. I realize people got to do their own stuff. How do you get people started?
We talked earlier about knowing who we really are. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really the first and most important step. And what that involves, from my perspective, is, first of all, just raising awareness about my whole life. What's going on in my whole life? How am I showing up? How am I in relationship to everything that happens in my life? That's the first thing. Because we also tend to have a lot of judgments and criticisms and we beat ourselves up about all these things, the next thing we have to do is begin to accept it for what it is. And that's a powerful, powerful piece that many people don't even think about. But once you have some awareness and you begin to accept what is, then you can begin to look at who I really am. Who am I in relation to all these things, and how do I show up? And begin asking those questions, you know, like I described earlier. Just sit in front of a mirror and ask yourself, who am I? And see what the reflection responds. And just let yourself get deeper and deeper and deeper into that understanding. The other thing, once you become aware of who you are, then you can begin to understand some of the choices that you have made in your life, right? We all make choices. Most of our choices are unconscious. We don't really... you know, we do a lot of things on autopilot because we think that that's what we're supposed to do. We don't really put some conscious awareness or effort into it. So we make a lot of choices unconsciously, but we also still make choices consciously. And the question is, are those choices the best reflection of who you really are now that you know who you are? If they are, great. That means you're making good, positive choices that support your life. But if they're not, now you have the option to make some new choices. Or change your direction, or whatever it is. Excuse me. What comes after that, in my perspective, is a little bit of compassion. Because what happens is, if I realize that I've been making bad choices as a result of who I am, if I'm not living in integrity with my life or whatever, now I'm going to start beating myself up some more. So compassion becomes very, very important. And once I have that level of compassion, I can begin now to forgive not only myself, but all the other people in my life who I believe have caused me to suffer. Once those pieces are done, now I can begin to look more clearly at what I'm here to do based on my understanding of who I am. And that's really the first six steps of my life mastery process. So that's a starting point.
Good. So I want to go through those a little bit more. Understanding who you are, I use that phrasing or something similar, and present it to people as a choice. I mean, like, you get to decide who you are. Ultimately, okay, you're a spirit inhabiting a human body, but in terms of what you represent, like, for example, a person can decide that they live in integrity. They only speak truth. That's a thing someone could decide. And then from that flows a whole bunch of other things. And there are a whole range of things that you could decide that you're going to be or that you are, even if they're not perfect yet. You can say, you know, I've looked around and I've seen all these things. Maybe I've talked to David or Kellen or read a bunch of books or someone else. You know, this is who I am, who I want to be, and I'm going to declare it in the present tense. This is who I am.
Right.
And then some of the steps that you talked about, I love, because after you, most people don't make a declaration, this is who I am. They sort of live, as you know, reactively to what I'm expected to do, make money, do this, do this, do this, or what is going on around me, what's done to me, or what circumstances sort of happen. And from that place, we accumulate a lot of negative feelings toward others, as you described, and we accumulate a great pile of stuff toward ourselves. Oh, I screwed that up. Oh, I didn't tell the truth. I should have done this. I should have done that. And all this stuff. And unless you get rid of it, you carry it. And you carry it and you carry it and you carry it. And it's like carrying 1,000 pounds of rocks.
Both
frustration and negativity towards others or towards yourself. And you talked about forgiveness. So let's just start with this. Let's start with forgiveness. I agree with you. In fact, I, you know this, but the last book I published last year was called Forgiveness, A Journey of Courage to a Place of Freedom and Power. Why do you think forgiveness, two questions, why do you think it's so important and why do you think it's so hard?
Well, I think it's, I'm going to answer the second question first. I think forgiveness is hard because we all have ego minds that tell us if I forgive someone, that means I'm saying what they did was okay to me. That's what I'm doing. And in fact, that's completely untrue. That is not what forgiveness is about anyway. So that's one of the reasons it's hard. But it's also hard when we are talking about self-forgiveness because we, as I said, we, because of all the conditioning we've gone through, we have learned very, very well how to beat ourselves up. And to try and forgive ourselves now is where the ego mind really clears up and says, what are you going to do? And you can't forgive yourself. You're a jerk. You can't do that. You know, you've done all these bad behaviors. So it's difficult from that perspective. But it doesn't need to be difficult when you understand the real purpose of forgiveness. And so this now gets to your first question. Forgiveness really is not about the object of the forgiveness. The forgiveness is for the person doing the forgiving. That is the key point. And now why do I forgive? So that I can release myself from all my ideas of revenge or justice or any of that stuff and just let the universe take care of it. When I release myself from that, I give myself the freedom to live my own life. I don't have to be a victim anymore. I give that all up. It's total liberation. And that's why I think forgiveness is so important. But people don't really understand it. I think they believe that if I forgive, then I am somehow condoning the behavior or I'm accepting the behavior or I'm saying it's okay. Or they might believe, well, if I forgive, then I also have to forget. And that's completely wrong, too. You know, let's face it. Sometimes you get some horrible thing happen to you. And because it has such a strong emotional impact, the likelihood that you're going to forget it is very slim. But the more you can forgive, the easier the forgetting part becomes. And it just becomes less and less impactful in your life over time.
So I love that. And I'm going to, because I think this is what you've said is so important, I'm going to reflect a little of it back. Forgiveness is for the person doing the forgiving, and that is true whether you're forgiving someone who injured you spiritually, physically, emotionally, whatever it is, or you're forgiving yourself for guilt that you're carrying.
Exactly.
It's, it's choosing no longer to allow events in the past to have power in the present.
Exactly.
And you talked about liberation, which I love. And again, if you've made mistakes, even terrible ones, then, you know, sure, do what you can to fix them. But most of those kinds of mistakes, especially the ones that are that really hurt both us and the people we may have injured, are emotional, and we can't fix those anyway. There's no amount of fixing, and we have, you know, lawsuits, and people try to substitute money for everything, but it doesn't do anything.
That's right. Yep.
And so,
well, you know,
forgiveness.
There's another side of forgiveness that I think is important that people understand. If the object of your forgiveness doesn't even have to know that you have expressed that forgiveness. So you can forgive somebody completely in absentia, and it's not for them anyway. So we have this funny little ritual in our society where, you know, Kellen, I might do something that hurts your feelings or something, and I'll say, oh, Kellen, I'm so sorry I did that. Can you forgive me? As if you forgiving me is in any way going to benefit me. I have this story that it will. But the reality is, you may not have any need to forgive me at all. You know? So when we ask someone else for forgiveness, really what we're trying to do is get them to let us off the hook for something that we've done. That's what I believe is happening. And people are very unlikely to do that just because we apologize for something if we don't take some serious accountability for our behaviors. So, you know, we have to, this is, you talked about integrity, and I can go into a whole long discussion about that. Integrity and self-accountability, these are extremely important tools that we have to learn. And by the way, they're the follow-on steps after purpose on my program. So
fabulous. I love that. You're right. And someone may never ask for forgiveness, and someone may have hurt you. I got a story that I like to use about my dog, who's now gone. But in 2007, I got my first dog, and it was right at the time my life changed completely after 30 years of the corporate mess. Anyway, I had this dog, and I'd never had a dog before, and I got him as a puppy, 2 or 3 months old. And there was a New Year's Eve celebration, 2007 going into 2008. And I was roughhousing with the dog, and it was a little bit too rough. And so the dog bumped into a speaker stand that I had in the room. And the speaker fell off the speaker stand and landed on the dog's toes. And it broke all the metatarsals, and the dog was in terrible pain. And it was late on New Year's Eve. And so my wife and I were driving all over the place trying to find an emergency veterinarian to open at midnight on New Year's Eve. Wow. Eventually we did, and we took him in, and they did surgery and did everything they could, and they gave him back to us and, you know, gave us some care instructions. But they told us, you know, the dog may have a limp later. You know, we've done everything we can, and it may or may not heal correctly. Well, sure enough, later the dog developed a limp when he either ran around too much or it was too cold, and then he would limp. So here is the beautiful illustration. I felt terrible about it. I thought, oh, it's my fault, da da da. But the dog wasn't having any of it. Even though the dog carried a limp, which was a mark of this accident, for the rest of his life, the dog wasn't having any of it that it was going to spoil his experience as a dog. So he was completely loving, and if you can attribute any human thought to him, the forgiveness was total, complete, and absolute. And it was an inconvenience that he had to deal with, but it didn't affect his enjoyment of life, and it didn't affect his relationship with me at all. And so the idea there, and it's certainly not a perfect analogy, but forgiveness is appropriate and necessary if you want to live an unburdened life, even if you have a limp.
That's right. Well, one of the things that I really love that story, by the way, and you know, you remind me and probably remind all the listeners that animals are really, really amazing in the sense that they don't seem to carry any of that stuff, you know? We're the ones who, we with the ego minds are the ones that tend to do that. But I'm not aware of any animal that carries a grudge or tries to get even or anything like that, unless it is in the moment that it is like reacting to a fight or something like that. So that's a really, really powerful story and something for us to be aware of. But one of the things that I try and practice on my own, and I also try and encourage other people to do it, is to forgive everyone for everything all the time. And better than that, to try and pre-forgive. Now, this is something that most people don't really understand. They probably never heard of it before. But I tell them, I said, look, sooner or later, no matter how good your life is, somebody's going to do something that's going to really piss you off, and it's going to mess things up. Well, what if you can hold that energy of forgiveness before it even happens? What kind of life will you have? Think about the liberation you give yourself right now by forgiving somebody in the future.
As weird as somebody might think that sounds, I totally agree with you. I love it. And I practice it when you're saying forgive everybody, everything, all the time. I say the same thing. So I love that. So I want to change topics now. Let's zip off of that and move to this ego mind that you've mentioned a couple of times. And what is that? Where do we get it? What is the ego mind? Where does it come? Three questions. What is it? Where do we get it? And why does it get in the road?
Oh, boy. Well, I think that everybody probably has heard of Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung, and they kind of popularized a lot of these terminologies, you know. Sigmund Freud didn't talk about the ego mind as a concept, but he did talk about the ego, the superego, and so forth, and the id, and all of these components of consciousness, and they're related to just the physical essence of who we are. They don't really relate to our spiritual essence at all. So when I refer to ego mind, I'm talking about that aspect of ourselves that seems to be interested in controlling everything. It is an aspect where the other part of it is it tries, or it has this story that it tells us that it's just trying to keep us safe. You know, it's trying to protect us from danger and risk and all this negative consequences and so forth, even when no such danger or risk or negative consequence are even there. Most of the time, when you are hearing in your mind some story that something is not right, that something is not going to be good for you, it's usually just a made-up story. It's basically fear of something that might happen in the future. That's really all it is. Now, the fact of the matter is, yeah, there is reason to be afraid sometimes in real life, but very, very rarely do you ever have a situation that is genuinely dangerous to you. Most of the time, it's just your imagination.
So if we set all of the physical things, let's set all the physical things aside, because we're not talking about physical danger.
Right.
And you talk about this, the ego is a thing that's trying to keep us safe. And by safe, you mean not, because we've set all the physical things aside, then that means safe from embarrassment, safe from ridicule, safe from being viewed as wrong, safe from being viewed as inadequate, safe from all these other things that we've decided are dangerous or been taught are dangerous. So the ego mind is busy trying to do two things. One, keep me safe from everything. And at the second second thing that occurs to me is make me matter. I use that M cubed. It's trying to make me matter all the time, right? So it's kind of keep me safe from all
and
this.
And when you say matter, you mean M-A-T-T-E-R, not matter, M-A-D-D-E-R.
No, matter. Make me important. Make me, woo, yeah, I'm exactly. So cool. So it's trying to make That's me right. matter, raise me up, and at the same time protect me from all this gobbledygook that isn't real anyway.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so what happens is if you look around the world today, I would say a good 90% of the world's population are either deeply embedded in ego or still partially embedded in it and working on their way out of it. Transcending the ego is not a trivial task. It's not something that you just, you know, decide, oh, I think I'm going to transcend my ego today. Sorry, it doesn't work that way. You know?
No.
It doesn't work that way. The ego is going to be a part of you as long as you remain physically alive on this on this planet. And there are people, however, many of them actually, but probably numbering in 10,000 or less on the planet, who have managed to transcend their ego. And they become our spiritual teachers, our gurus, and so forth. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that every spiritual teacher or every guru has transcended his or her ego. I am saying that the people who have transcended their ego are the kind of people that you just know are the people you want to listen to and be with. That's what I'm saying.
And I'm going to interrupt you there because I love this. And it is not that they're running around wearing a leader, spiritual leader, or guru tag on their head. Like, they're not calling people to them. Their walk of life and behavior is such that people are attracted to them because they don't have ulterior motives and they are not living from a place of make me matter. They're living from a place of love and giving instead of that ego, which is either protecting them from somebody might say this, that, and the other, because they don't really need to worry about that. They're not concerned. And they have no need to matter because they've already come to a place where they live in service and love.
Right, yeah. I think that the concept of ego mind is described in a lot of different ways by different teachers. But if people want to learn more about that, Eckhart Tolle is a good example of someone who talks about the ego mind. There's a series of books called A Course in Miracles, which is another excellent source of information on that. David R. Hawkins is a brilliant writer who passed 2005, 2006, I think. But he's one of those people who I think actually did manage to elevate his consciousness to a high enough level where he transcended his ego. And yet another person would be Jiddu Krishnamurti. You may have heard of him, or Paramahansa Yogananda. These are amazing, amazing people who have shared with us perspectives, and you know they give their information away. I mean, certainly they don't give away their books. They have to have, you know, they have to have compensation to cover their own costs for producing the books and stuff. But the information is essentially free. Anybody who does the work, anybody who deepens their own understanding of who they are, eventually comes to the same truth. When you can understand how your own ego works and you can treat it or get it to enrolled as a partner rather than a controller in your life, as something that can support you, then before you know it, you have your soul and your ego working together. And it's an amazing partnership when it works.
So this is really good. So now we've talked about what it is. We understand that the problems that it causes are because it's trying to protect me from stuff that doesn't exist and maintain my saving face at all costs and making me important in terms of position or wealth or people thinking I'm cool or whatever language you want to use to describe that. When you want to go on the path of a Hawkins or others who have become aware of, and, you know, totally, I recognize all. Yeah, I have one of Krishnamurti's books, you know, about 18 inches thick on the wall over there. How do you, I mean, I have my own processes, but I want you to talk about how do you help someone identify when they're operating from that egoic consciousness and to become aware of and then to begin to choose something different. How do you help me if I were to come to you and say, I believe you, I hear you, and we've worked some of these other things. Let's start working on this, you know, beginning to elevate so I'm not so controlled by this egoic consciousness.
Well, there's two different things that can happen here. If someone approaches me and says, I got to get out of my ego mind, blah, 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 you know, whatever, then I will respond to them in one particular way. And that might be, well, what do you imagine? What is your ego mind telling you right now? Well, my ego mind is telling me that if I can become more spiritual, then I will be more popular. And I said, well, that does sound like an egoic perspective, don't you think? Because being spiritual has nothing to do with popularity. Being spiritual, being truthful to who you really are is just about owning your own truth. And it's about raising your own awareness. Is that what you want? Or do you want to have people like you because you show up a certain way? Because if that's what you want, then you're already stuck in ego. That's a shadow belief. That's something that's coming deep down from your subconscious. Currently, you have a belief that you're not good enough, and so you have to make yourself better. And maybe one of the ways you make yourself better is by making other people less good, somehow pushing them down in order to make yourself rise up. You see, this is what shadow behavior does. And shadow behavior, it's called that because it's mostly unconscious, right? Mm-hmm. And when it's unconscious, that just means that it's happening without our conscious awareness. Well, if you want to have conscious awareness, then you simply have to stop what you're doing and begin examining, viewing, witnessing, observing without judgment. Because if you can do it without judgment, then you can say, oh, yeah, now I see how my ego behaves. Now I see what it's doing. And now you can simply look at your ego as like a little child who maybe acts out and has a tantrum. And you, as the loving parent, can just sit there and say, you know, I see that you're angry. Why don't you tell me what you're angry about? So have a conversation with your ego mind. You know, that's what I do. I have conversations with my ego mind all the time. What is it that you really want? What are you trying to get here? And most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, my ego mind is trying to get something that is in the form of a variation of love. It's trying to bring more love into my life, even though it has a very dysfunctional way of doing that. So, you know, it's got a positive purpose, but it's all kind of messed up thinking that drives the purpose. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. And I want to repeat a couple of things, and then I'm going to ask you about your work and how to get a hold of you, because we have about 7 minutes left. So what I'm hearing you say is the conversation. I love the conversation with your ego mind. And in order to do that, you just start noticing, like separate. Be the observer, because that spirit in you that we talked about way in the beginning, it is possible, because those ego consciousness, those egoic conversations where you're trying to make me matter, be important, have more love, and you imagine that it's in the form of people petting you or paying you or something, and you're trying to get more of that, that's still part of this make me matter. And you can just observe that and say, wow, look what I'm doing and saying. And beginning to notice that is important and powerful. And then you said something about shadow work, too, and we don't really have time to dive into that a lot. But just for a minute, tell me about this shadow behavior.
Well, the term shadow has been around for probably thousands of years. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really popularized until the time of Carl Jung, who started talking about it and formalizing his own theory about, you know, shadow being basically the entire unconscious. And he was looking at different kinds of archetypes and so forth, and how different kinds of behaviors show up in different people. I have come to believe that shadow I call it now any kind of behavior that is, what's the word, influenced by an unconscious belief. Now, the unconscious belief might be the world is an unsafe place. Well, that's not a terribly good one. How about here's an unconscious belief you might have, or somebody might have. People who have lots of money must be crooked or evil. You know, people have that because they've learned somewhere along the way that the love of money is the root of all evil. And so therefore money itself must be evil. And therefore the people who have money must be evil. Do you see the chain?
Yeah,
of
yeah, yeah.
So even though you may not have a conscious awareness of that belief, it might live. And so the unconscious here is that you maybe take that you that don't pay very much money because you don't want to be seen as someone who has a lot of money and therefore is evil. Do you see? So you end up with shadow behaviors that come out sideways because you're not aware of them. Well, that just means, well, where do I get my beliefs about money? How do I resolve that? And what is the truth about money anyway? You see, so the more you can do the deep work on it, the more you can begin to understand where your unconscious beliefs are. And one things that I like to tell people to do is just spend some time journaling. What do I believe about money? And just write down everything you can without even thinking about it. Just write it all down. And then you'll see some patterns emerging, and you might even see some thoughts that come out on your paper that you think, oh my God, I never realized that that's what I was thinking. That's what we're talking about with awareness. Sometimes it takes a little bit of deep dive and a bit of honesty.
So I love this because I'm glad you did all that, because when people talk about doing the work and deep work and we throw this jargon around, it really is, because it takes time. It takes being by yourself. It takes some meditation or silence. It takes some willingness to tell the truth and some other things that we often don't, in fact, most of the time don't do, really. Okay, so this has been fabulous. I want you to take a minute now, a couple of minutes, and tell people what you do, your life mastery, you know, and I know you as the life mastery coach. So tell me about your life mastery work, how people can find you and that sort of thing so that they'll know.
Well, I'm monitoring the time here and I want to honor the time. So what I do is I call it life mastery coaching. And what that means is I try to help people find the truth within themselves so that they can uncover and discover and maybe begin to expose the kinds of deep, deep, deep heart's desires they have for creating the life of their dreams. And, you know, it sounds like a fairy tale kind of thing. But most often, people who want that kind of stuff, they somehow tell themselves, well, you know, I can do that next week or next month or, you know, the week after, whatever. I'll get around to it later. Or maybe they buy a training program and then it just sits on the shelf and they don't really pay any attention to it. Listen, anybody who wants to become better at their life really has no choice but to start looking within, finding the truth within, and then emerging with the next version of who you really want to be. And that's what I do, is I kind of support that work. I help people to find the answers for themselves. I don't really tell anybody how to do anything, although I do offer them certain kinds of tools and skills and programs and stuff like that that might support them. So I have a website at yourlifemasterycoach.com. You're welcome to go and check me out there. That's yourlifemasterycoach.com. One word, easy to find. You can contact me there. You can fill out a form to do a discovery session with me if you like. Or you can pick up a copy of one or two of my eBooks. It's all there and it's easy to get to.
It is easy to get to, and it only happens when you make choices, because when you put things off, nothing ever changes. David, I want to thank you today. I want to thank you for your candor, your insight, your helping us understand what some of these jargon words, egoic mind and deep work and shadow and stuff that floats around in the self-help world and in all these books. And also, thank you personally, because I've known you for these years, for the work that you're doing and how you add good to the world. Thanks for being with me today.
Well, thank you so much, Kellen. It's my pleasure. I'm glad I was able to support you.
All right, good. Well, if you want, you know, and as David noted, nobody makes anybody do anything. And some people have a funny idea about coaching. But if you want, like an athlete, to get to the Olympic level of life, instead of just settling for what's obvious and easy, then choosing to make growth moves, to stop procrastinating, is a good thing. And David has given us some great stuff tonight. I want to encourage you not to settle for the easy and obvious, but to make the choices and be willing to do the work to create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.